This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Ewart. Coming up, China's foreign minister hits back at critics of his country's investment strategy in the Pacific. Vanuatu takes a giant leap forward with a commercial trial using drones to distribute medicines and vaccines to remote regions.
Once it's on the ground, a healthcare worker can walk up to it, open a hatch on the top, pull out the vaccine carrier, close the lid, press a button on the side of the aircraft. It counts down from 15, takes back off vertically and flies back home.
And a new era begins for soccer in Papua New Guinea.
I have already planned to restructure the National Soccer League in the country. I also have a plan of starting a professional competition in the country in preparation for our 2026 World Cup in the Oceania region.
More from John Caponato, who's finally been elected as the president of the PNG FA, later. First, the opposition in Papua New Guinea are gathering their forces with a view to taking on Prime Minister Peter O'Neill early in the new year and attempting to force him out of office. Matters have come to a head over what many perceive to be the government's lavish spending on the upcoming APEC summit, with opposition leader Patrick Pruach calling for transparency on precisely how much public money has been spent. And as Bethany Harriman reports from Port Moresby, he's been joined in the campaign against Mr. O'Neill by two of the PNG Parliament's elder statesmen, former Prime Minister Sir Makary Murauta and former Deputy Prime Minister Beldon Nama.
The announcement felt a bit like history repeating itself. In 2011, Sir Makary Murauta and Beldon Nama were part of the group that ousted former Prime Minister Sir Michael Somare. Now Mr. Nama says they've decided to join with the National Alliance to do the same to Peter O'Neill.
The members who are in the O'Neill regime, we have very good members there. We have good ministers. I'm calling on them to make the decision for your people, not for National Alliance, for your people. To stand up with National Alliance and be counted.
Mr. Nama was Deputy Prime Minister in the government led by Peter O'Neill in 2011 after Sir Michael Somare was removed.
And I believe the move that now PNG Party has merged with National Alliance and we are now National Alliance, it should send a strong signal for you to start making your decision for your country, for your people.
Beldon Nama is also the leader of the PNG party. He brings three more MPs with him, taking National Alliance numbers up to 16. Sir Makary Murauta moves by himself after a split in the country's oldest political party, PANGU. He says the government must account for the billions of kina that he believes has been spent on the upcoming APEC meeting.
Toward 800 vehicles for APEC, including Bentleys and Maseratis. Australians have given a lot, New Zealand's have given a lot, and this begging our partners to help us demonstrates the fact that we cannot afford to house APEC. 3 billion kina, according to estimates by the World Bank, is going to be spent. It's our money being spent on APEC. An APEC packet, as I said, full of holes, going down to Never Neverland.
Opposition leader and the National Alliance Party frontman Patrick Pruach is calling for more transparency on how the O'Neill government has been spending public money, especially on APEC.
We will investigate, have a full investigation done, but Sam McCarron, on behalf of the opposition, has written to the Ombudsman Commission.
Meanwhile, the PANGU party says it has expelled its parliamentary leader, the Communications and Energy Minister Sam Basil. Mr. Basil campaigned with PANGU in the 2017 election, but shortly after he was re-elected to his Bulolo seat, he crossed the floor with 12 other PANGU MPs. The party's national president, Patrick Pundao, says Mr. Basil has been expelled because he's distanced himself from the party and has not attended meetings.
Because he is not coming back to the people then. He is not coming back to the brands. He is not coming back to the party to tell, to explain the reasons as to why he left the party and join up with the O'Neill government.
Mr. O'Neill has been enjoying a grace period on votes of no confidence since his election, but that will end in February when the opposition can once again challenge for leadership of the country.
That's Bethany Harriman reporting from Port Moresby. Meanwhile, China's foreign minister Wang Yi says critics of his country's aid program in the Pacific should focus on making their own investment contributions. Mr. Wang has made his first visit to Papua New Guinea 2 weeks out from the APEC summit, which Beijing has been keen to support. Concerns have been raised in Australia and elsewhere about a perceived push by China to extend their influence right across the Pacific. But as Natalie Whiting reports, Mr. Wang insists that Chinese assistance never comes with political conditions attached.
Hanging over most main streets and freeways in Port Moresby are new security cameras. It's the latest China aid project to be rolled out as the capital prepares to host the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit. PNG's Foreign Minister Rimbik Pato has praised China's generosity.
We only have to look at the evidence of what is around us, how generous China has been for Papua New Guinea as host of APEC. They have built the roads on which we are driving around with comfort.
But China's generosity in PNG and the region through increased spending and loans has raised concerns that the Chinese government is pushing for influence and control in the Pacific. In his first visit to the country, China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi defended China's aid program.
In providing assistance, China fully respects the will of governments and people of the countries in question. We never interfere in other countries' domestic affairs, and our assistance never comes with political conditions.
But as he stood side by side with his PNG counterpart, addressing local and Chinese media, he did thank PNG for its strong adherence to the One China policy. PNG's Foreign Minister Rimbik Pato also dismissed any suggestion there was risk associated with the relationship.
There is no threat to our sovereignty. We are a sovereign nation.
While China's interest in the region is growing, Australia remains the biggest aid donor. Mr. Pato says nothing will stand in the way of the partnership between his country and China.
And we support the partnerships with our long-standing friends, Australia and New Zealand, and we welcome the partnership of China. Our partnership does not in any way shift the balance of power.
The visit by the Chinese Foreign Minister is the latest in a line of events showcasing the growing relationship between the two countries. In a fortnight, President Xi Jinping will make his first trip to the country. He'll arrive 2 days before the APEC summit for a state visit. Foreign Minister Wang Yi says that visit will include announcements about new projects and assistance measures. He maintains China puts the greater good ahead of its own.
To some people, I would say this. Rather than pointing fingers at others' contributions, it's better to take the effort to do more things that will benefit the Pacific Island states.
He says China would welcome greater cooperation in the region, including with Australia. While saying China's development poses no threat to anyone, he warned against any actions to try to prevent it.
Any attempts or practices to block the development of developing countries, China and PNG included, would represent a most severe injustice.
As PNG edges closer to hosting the region's leaders, the country's APEC minister, Justin Tschenko, acknowledges the role China has played.
China has contributed significantly to the success of this APEC year in infrastructure and development aid funding.
But he echoed his colleagues' words that PNG is a sovereign country.
There's no control or influence of China over Papua New Guinea. It's a friendship and it's a partnership.
A partnership that looks like growing.
PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting reporting from Port Moresby, and you're listening to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia with me, Richard Ewart. The candidacy of the man putting himself forward as Fiji's alternative Prime Minister, Sitiveni Rambuka, is still in the balance with less than 2 weeks to go before polling day. The country's anti-corruption commission, FICAC, continues to pursue Mr. Rambuka and their appeal against his acquittal on a charge of failing to declare his assets to the election office won't be resolved now until November the 12th. Meanwhile, in Solomon Islands, allegations of electoral fraud are a hot topic, even though the election there isn't due until early next year. The Electoral Commission has begun distributing the list of provisional voters after a process of cleaning up the roll that uncovered multiple attempts to cheat the system, including one case where a person is understood to have registered as many as 10 times in different constituencies. But as Evan Wasuka reports from Honiara, more surprising was the higher-than-expected number of voter transfers, despite tough new laws designed to stamp out the practice of cross-border voting.
This year's provisional list puts the number of voters in the country at almost 373,000, making it about 30% larger than the finalized voter list of the 2014 election. The Electoral Commission says it expects the total to be trimmed down, with voters having until January to review the list and to object to names that they believe should not be in their constituency. Solomon Islands Chief Electoral Officer Moses Aitala says they have already removed people with multiple registrations from the list.
We have removed a significant number of people who attempted to register more than once. Now, I can say right now that Mifala can tolerate if you say you register again and again and again, maybe three times, I'm all right, but go up like five times, six times, seven times, eight times, nine times. And our record now is someone attempted to register 10 times. This, to me, is a clear indication of an attempt to defraud the system.
Mr. Saitala says the office has been able to spot these attempts because of a biometric voter registration system. He says the system uses photos and fingerprint details, which makes cheating a difficult task.
The BVR system is very, very accurate. Never mind you change your name, your last name, or you're changing your color, your hair, or dye, or whatever, the system will pick you up.
The Electoral Commission say they are assessing the incidents and will refer some cases to police for investigation. Another figure highlighted by the Electoral Commission was the 55,000 voters who transferred their registration to different constituencies.
This is the first time now we have reached this number of transfers. Huh? Never before we have come across. So I'm hard not to predict that we're going to be like this for about transfers, cross-border.
Mr. Saitala has questioned the high number of voter transfers, which has been a hot topic of public debate on social media and on local talkback shows. He says it could be the result of candidates asking voters to register in their constituency, even when those voters may not actually live there.
When we start to see now, people not go transfers, yeah. This is the time now we start to realize now whether you didn't win or you've been influenced now to go for. Now, if you are influenced like this, the onus is still on the voter now. Because you should never not make the choice. Sometimes you persuaded by a bag of rice or incentives like small one there. Yeah. That's why we really have to educate in public here that one penalty here is 50,000 there. 5 years imprisonment if you go and register, giving misleading information here.
Matthew Valley is the Solomon Islands Police Commissioner. He says a new team is being formed to investigate possible election offences.
We are setting up a special election team as part of our NCID crime portfolio to look at these cases, not only for registration but any other electoral offences that might be brought to our attention over the period of the campaign, the objection and admissions period and NGE.
Mr. Valley says the police will focus on the most serious cases and the ones with the best chances of prosecution.
The police can't investigate every single complaint that's brought to our attention. What we will be doing with the Electoral Commission is evaluating them and triaging the most serious and compelling matters, and be looking for the evidence to support a prosecution in the courts.
Those who are prosecuted will be charged under a new electoral law with harsher penalties, and candidates found guilty of wrongdoing may be disqualified altogether.
Evan Masuka reporting from Honiara. The Minister for Health in Papua New Guinea, Sepuka Timo, is playing down the rising number of complaints about drug and medicine shortages in the country. He says the problem is not one of supply, but more a question of distribution, and a failure, he says, on the part of some clinics to act fast enough when supplies are dwindling.
Majority of the items are in the area medical stores. The managers of the facilities, like hospitals or clinics or health centers, they know the system. They need to inform us on what are the shortages they have. So we check in other area medical stores, we find them and we move them over. That's the way the system normally works. And when we are definitely short, we do what we call emergency procurement.
But even if there are enough medicines to go around, getting those medicines to patients in PNG's most remote communities is never easy. And that's a problem in Vanuatu as well. But there they may just have found a solution that can benefit them and PNG in the future, with a world-first project that will see life-saving vaccines being delivered by drone, as Yara Murray Atfield reports.
Nurse Dominique Veratos works in the village of Melsisi in Vanuatu's Pentecost Island and is in charge of ordering vaccines not just for the village but for the entire island from the capital, Port Vila. But he says getting those vaccines to the people who need them can often be a struggle.
When we get heavy rain, trucks unable to pass through and cross the rivers, in that case we have to notify officials in Port Vila and tell them to hold the vaccines. Then when they do send the vaccines, we have to send a vehicle from here to pick them up.
His story is familiar across Vanuatu, with more than 80 islands spread across 1,600 kilometres and many villages don't have reliable road access. But his job might become easier soon. In a world first, two companies have been given commercial contracts to trial the delivery of vaccines to hard-to-reach places by drone. The contracts were advertised by the Vanuatu government, and from 20 companies looking to take on the job, the two successful bids came from Germany's Wingcopter Holding and the Australian firm Swoop Aero, whose founder and chief executive is Eric Peck.
It's a really exciting opportunity because it was the first global tender for drone transport ever released.
The contracts come in two parts. The first starts in a month when the drones will do test runs from an airstrip on the main island of Efate to three smaller islands off Vanuatu's north coast, flying to and from cordoned off areas. The second phase of the trial will start in January when the companies will begin transporting vaccines to health facilities on each of the three islands. If the drones prove their viability during that time, Vanuatu's Ministry of Health and its Civil Aviation Authority will sign off on expanding the program to regular deliveries of vaccines across the country. The project is supported by the world's largest procurer of vaccines, UNICEF. Andrew Parker is head of their Vanuatu field office, and he says vaccines have traditionally been a huge challenge to transport to the country's remote areas.
If the vaccine teams are looking to head out into communities to vaccinate children, they have to then physically carry cold boxes with the ice packs to avoid the vaccines rising in temperature. They have a very narrow band in which they can remain viable between 2 and 8 degrees centigrade.
Swoop Aero's Eric Peck says the drones are designed to make life easier for everyone involved.
A healthcare worker can pack a series of vaccines in a WHO-approved vaccine carrier. They hand it over to us. We can drop it into the aircraft, load a pre-planned flight route, hit go. Once it's on the ground, a healthcare worker can walk up to it, open a hatch on the top, pull out the vaccine carrier, close the lid, press a button on the side of the aircraft. It counts down from 15, takes back off vertically and flies back home.
In Pentecost, nurse Dominique Veratos says once vaccines do arrive to his island, many places are still not reachable by road. And he spent hours and sometimes days walking the medicine to villages down bush tracks.
So with the drone?
With the drone, it will be a big help. It can go deliver the vaccines and come back. Well, I don't have to go anywhere. I can help at the health facility instead, seeing sick people or pregnant women.
If the trials go well, the Vanuatu Ministry of Health still needs to grant approval for non-medical professionals to handle the medicine, and the Civil Aviation Authority would need to give approval for the flight paths. UNICEF's Andrew Parker says there are still lots of unknowns as far as the new technology is concerned, but it could be a game changer for delivering medicine right across the Pacific.
Should that prove promising, then certainly the results will be of interest to many of the Pacific Island countries that face similar logistical challenges.
The first trial for the technology will begin on December 3rd and will work with health professionals and people from across the community to get it ready for takeoff.
Yara Murray Atfield reporting. I'm Richard Hewitt, and you're listening to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. The sport of soccer in Papua New Guinea is looking forward to a brighter future now that rival factions have come together after 2 years of infighting, and John Caponato has achieved his long-cherished goal by being voted in as PNG Football Association president. And he has big plans for the game at domestic and national level, but he says his first priority is to find out exactly what was going on inside the PNG FA under the disgraced previous president, David Chung, who resigned earlier this year amid corruption claims.
The country of Papua New Guinea was brought into shame by the former president, Mr. David Chung. It tarnished the reputation of Papua New Guinea football. Whether he's guilty or whether he's not guilty, the investigation is still going with FIFA and then in New Zealand. But for Papua New Guinea football, for the last 16 years, money has been promised to build such activities here and there. We have not seen the tangible development of those things. So I'm not going to sit down in office and do nothing. I'm going to do investigation into where all these fundings have been going. And I will advise FIFA on that. The football fraternity, the future generation, needs to know in the last 16 years of office, what have we done? And I will conduct a forensic investigation into Papua New Guinea football.
John Capinato's only rival for the PNG FA president's role was John Wesley Gonjuan, who stepped into the breach after David Chung's sudden resignation. After losing the election by 10 votes to 8, he has agreed to serve as senior vice president, and he says it's time to put old rivalries aside.
I don't see any reason why I shouldn't be working with John. I've got an open heart that I need to be able to work with him and look at developing soccer in PNG, which is more important than any other matter.
One of the more sensitive aspects, though, of what John Capinato says he wants to do is he wants to take a very long, hard look at how things were working within the PNG FA, particularly while David Chung was still there as president. Does that make you feel slightly awkward? Because you effectively have a foot in two camps now, don't you?
I prepare to work in open books, and whatever he wants to do and come and investigate or find out, it's up to him to come and check. We've gone through a number of investigations with FIFA and the compliance team, also the local audit. So if he wants to come and do the same thing over, it's up to him. I respect his decision.
Is it your belief that David Chung has a case to answer as far as what he did within the PNG FA?
David has done his part and now he's moved on, so I don't think we should be dwelling on the past.
Once he's cleared the decks on the financial front, John Capinato has ambitions to put soccer in PNG on a professional footing for the first time, and he believes there are willing sponsors out there ready to help him do that.
Collectively, the corporate sponsors, all the partners that are out there, I think they're just waiting for the organization to be structured, to be put in the better position, that they could be confident that if they're going to put their money in, they want to ensure that Papua New Guinea is now setting on its course with a new president and looking at all our competitions. And I've already planned to restructure the National Soccer League in the country. I also have a plan of starting a professional competition in the country in preparation for our 2026 World Cup in the Oceania region.
As far as the players are concerned, they've borne the brunt of the political squabbling over the last 2 years, and the national captain, Raymond Gunemba, says it's time now to take the game in Papua New Guinea to where it should be, and a professional league would be a great start.
That would be an ideal thing to hear, because previously our National Soccer League is not running well, but now I think we are back together as one. It will be more competitive, and we will bring more sponsors, business houses in, and I think everything will be okay.
But while PNG Soccer has finally put its house in order, that same task is a work in progress for PNG Rugby Union. But with two-time Olympic chef de mission Sid Yates at the helm as interim chairman, the signs are good, and World Rugby and Oceania Rugby are satisfied that key matters of governance are being addressed.
We've worked with them. They've assisted us get our governance program back in shape. We've got a governance specialist coming up to help us run a constitutional workshop and helping us with planning for 2019 program and making sure that we can apply and get funding where possible.
The infighting that has dogged rugby in PNG has impacted on and off the field. The RFU has no staff at all at the moment, but several positions have been advertised now, and Sid Yates says the response has been good.
Hopefully in the very near future we'll be able to appoint an administrator to help us move forward. We don't have any employees at the moment. But I think people want to see progress. People want to see rugby prosper, and people want to see the end of politics, and people want to see success at international level as well.
On the field, the immediate focus is on the Pukpuks and the Pale, the men's and women's sevens teams, who are in Sydney for the inaugural Diggers Cup tournament. For the men, it's the start of a season which they hope will culminate in earning a place on the World Series at the qualifying tournament in Hong Kong. Craig Morgan is tournament director for the Diggers Cup, and he believes PNG certainly have the potential to mix it with the top teams.
We're trying to work closely with the region to provide Oceania an opportunity for the developing nations to get additional tournament time, because it's crucial for their growth and their ability to compete and try and get onto the World Series. PNG are a great example. With enough game time and enough investment behind their program, they could become one of the superpowers of the Pacific.
Meanwhile, back in Papua New Guinea, Sid Yates says once their governance issues have been resolved, the RFU want to push ahead with a development program that will take the game to all corners of the country.
Ultimately, we'd like to see a development officer in each of the four main regions of Papua New Guinea. We'd like to get it re-established at the grassroots level again. We want to see rugby in schools again. We need pathways for our senior team.
And some of those seniors, both men and women, will be in action next weekend at the Oceania Sevens, where the PNG men will line up against Solomon Islands and host nation Fiji in the pool round, while the women will take on Samoa, Nauru and Australia. And that's it from this edition of Pacific Review. You can listen to the show at any time by downloading our podcast or visiting the Pacific Beat website. I'm Richard Hewitt. Thank you very much for listening.